is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening and welcome, Bahamas. This is Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto, and I'm pleased to have in the studio as my guest co-host Dr. Graham Cates, who is the medical director of Family Medicine Center here in New Providence and also in Rock Sound, Eleuthera. We're also very pleased to have in the studio, and the reason for his presence is because of the topic today, and I'll get into that in a minute, but that is the esteemed Dr. Richard Adderley, who is a licensed clinical psychologist with specialized training in public mental health. Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for being present today.
Good evening. Thanks for having us.
Okay, so we always talk about empowering the public with information. We're always talking about preventative health. We're talking about being proactive with your health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health. So today, we've spoken enough in the last many months about physical health. Let's talk about the all-important and not enough emphasis put on mental health and mental health awareness. So today, it's going to be a very interesting talk. Hopefully, we can enlighten a lot of individuals. We can provide some hope for many. And you're not alone if you're suffering from any mental health issue. Please don't feel stigmatized by it. Everybody has an issue at some point in life. Everybody having shame and embarrassment is to continue to live and suffer in silence. So I have some amount of background in psychiatry. I actually spent 9 months, maybe 22, 23 years ago in Sandilands, and I was accepted to do specialist training in psychiatry. And at the last moment, I decided, you know what? I woke up one day, I don't want to become a urologist. So I could have had a very different path, but I'm well aware of what goes on in Sandilands, and my hats are off to all the nurses there, all Indeed. The orderlies, all the psychiatrists and psychologists. It's a very, very difficult, challenging job that they do, and there are true heroes. So I want to talk about a little bit about mental health, and let's talk about an important topic related to mental health. Dr. Adderley, what is the link between mental health and poverty? So we always know that, obviously, any layperson will realize that being in poverty in itself is a depressing situation. It can lead to anxiety. It could lead to anguish. You can feel hopeless. What is the link between poverty, which unfortunately is prevalent in many parts of our community, and actual mental illness and mental disorders?
Okay. So let's start off by, there are three key areas that I wanted to talk about. Worrying.
Yes.
Okay. And worrying is negative. Worrying deals with those things that you stay up all night thinking about. It's the bills, it's the illness, it's how am I going to survive, where the next meal come from, my job.
The children.
The children, okay? Yes. And so we tend to worry. Worrying is repetitive. Worrying is a mind. Then we've got to deal with the stress. And stress is physical. We see the first signs of stress in physical issues. Take, for instance, someone comes down to see Dr. Cates, and there's a physical ailment. And very frequently, I get the referral because this person you know, dealing with a physical issue. But the fact is that we also need to deal with the mental, because a lot of the physical issues have been manifested mentally as well. And so you've got the worrying, you've got the stress. And then I like to say that worrying and stress, when they're untreated, they combine and they produce a child that's called anxiety. And anxiety takes on the physical stress, it takes on the mental worry. And that's why a lot of times you see panic attacks, because you see the physical and the mental being affected. And the more you have to worry about, the more you are lacking, then the greater will be the worrying, the greater will be the stress. Now, this doesn't mean that those persons, because we've got some persons who are not in poverty, but they're experiencing mental issues as well, because they've got other things to worry about and they've got other stresses. And so it's critical when persons come in to see me for us to ask those questions. And then, what are the things that are producing stress? It's critical to also understand that stresses, if we identify the cause, the source of the stress, if we can remove those stresses, then it automatically alleviates some of the stress. One more thing I want to say is that we love that prayer, the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things that I can, and wisdom to know the difference. For many people, we struggle with the things that we cannot change. My philosophy is that if you cannot change it, then don't worry as much about it. Let's focus on the things that you can change. The things that you can change are important. But most people resist changing some of the things that they know is necessary to be changed.
Well, I think you made some excellent points, but obviously you want to say fundamentally it's important to say that not all persons in poverty obviously have some mental health issue, and also not all wealthy people are immune to mental health issues. So there's, however, a strong correlation between poverty, financial insecurity, poor mental health at some point in their life. And that is a straightforward correlation. But let me just ask Dr. Cates, who for decades has been an important person in trying to push forward primary care as a family practitioner. We have an overwhelming number of persons in high incidence of non-communicable diseases. Obviously, and I've seen it myself, persons that you diagnose with diabetes, the first thing that there's not going to be acceptance, and then there's going to be a period of depression. They feel like the body's let them down. They feel hopelessness, helplessness. They feel despair. The same thing with hypertension. The same thing with obesity, not being able to control their weight and not seeing an end in sight. How do we correlate? And obviously we need to have a multidisciplinary approach, and that's why institutions like Family Medicine Center are perfect, where we can have consults within our own building very quickly and we can come to a solution and treat somebody as a whole. How common is it for someone that you've diagnosed, and you do it every single day, with a non-communicable disease, if not that day, eventually will present with some form of depression, and sometimes it's chronic depression or even anxiety?
Yeah, so very, very valid point. I think this is something that, you know, people don't understand. When people think about a mental health and they think about a chronic illness, they think about the big things like cancer, for example. You know, somebody has a cancer diagnosis, but I think everybody who is diagnosed with some chronic medical condition goes through the grieving process. And just as you've described, where there is this loss, there is this sense of, wow, I was well and whole, and all of a sudden I've come to the medical physician and they're now telling me that there's a problem. So one, obviously, is the grieving, as you mentioned, and then going through that process of the denial. You know, often we see patients in our practice where there's multiple to go through to actually be able to get them to a point of being able to accept the diagnosis and say, look, we need to do something about it, right? Because you can't be the ostrich in the sand, just burying your head and not being willing. So I would say in our clinical practice, probably about one in three of the patients that we see with chronic non-communicable conditions are going to have mental health, whether that be anxiety, whether it be stress and burnout associated with her condition. I just had a patient in today by way of example, 26-year-old, type 1 diabetic, has been diagnosed for greater than 10 years and is struggling to cope with his diabetes. Not because he doesn't know how to manage his diabetes. He knows very well what to do with his insulin, with monitoring his blood sugars, but the problem that he's faced with is his mental well-being. He is overwhelmed. He is stressed out about his diabetes. He doesn't know what to do or how to manage the anxiety that he's experiencing associated with what he's actually going through and is actually in the early stages of depression. So as healthcare providers, we're not only looking after the person's physical well-being, but trying to dig into, okay, well, why is this behavior happening? And what can we do to be able to assist, to help people? Then chronic non-communicable diseases are very common. As the incidence of chronic non-communicable diseases in the Bahamas continues to grow, we are seeing more and more mental health, anxiety, depression, stress, burnout. But the good news is that there is hope, right? And there is hope through healthcare providers like ourselves that have a level of awareness that we can bring to the general public to educate the public. And with the resources that are available to be able to provide support, not just looking at the physical person and saying, quickly writing a prescription, oh, take this medication and this will make it all better, but really trying to drill down into, obviously, how do we help these people, individual patients and families? Because, you know, this gentleman that I saw today, 26-year-old, has a wife, has two kids, and they're all being impacted by it. And so we had to look at the whole approach to the whole family and make sure that we're looking at just not the one individual's needs, but how and providing the family with the necessary support.
And I think it's very pervasive throughout our society that many individuals have such anxiety related to their physical health that they don't even want to go for an annual physical. They think that no news is good news. They're afraid to face what might be. They live in denial. Many of them, it's because of misconceptions. They may be terrified that they had an aunt who died at 50 from diabetes, who lost both limbs from amputation or lost their sight, or their diabetes means you're never going to have an erection again,
right,
or you're going to end up on dialysis. So they have a lot of misconceptions, and they don't realize that if you can treat it effectively, you essentially can have a normal life in terms of longevity, in terms of quality of life.
And so many of the chronic non-communicable diseases that we see are treatable, number one, and there are things that can be done. And number two is that with the right support and the right team of people around you, not just your physician who's looking after your physical health, but also looking after your mental and emotional well-being, such as Dr. Adderley and the other team members, people can have a normal quality of life. And we do not have to develop those complications. You know, early detection of all of these conditions is so essentially important. And programs offered at a lot of medical facilities is where we ask questions about mental health. You know, what is your sleep pattern like? How are you feeling most days of the week? Are you feeling overwhelmed? Are you feeling anxious? Are you feeling depressed? Just as we would check your blood sugar or check your blood pressure. And so that we have a barometer to be able to obviously know where patients fall. And then we can be able to speak into those things. And for a lot of people, my experience has been that there are some just very simple coping skills that people need. And if we don't have the coping skills, just like if you don't know what to do, if your blood sugar is high in terms of being able to correct your blood sugar, and you don't have the coping skills to be able to deal with that, if we're not empowering people with the coping skills to be able to deal with stress, burnout, anxiety, the early onset of depression, then obviously they're restricted in terms of what is going to happen.
And I think it's very important. Part of this talk is that we want to take away the stigma of mental health. And I think if we were to look at it, we, as our society, is one of the more expensive societies in the world to live. We're in the top 10 of so many terrible categories, whether it's obesity, whether it's hypertension, whether it's diabetes, whether it's the cost of living. So everybody essentially has anxiety. Everybody has stress. Everybody is coping to make it. Most individuals in this country are living month to month, paycheck to paycheck. If anything happens out of the ordinary, it's a tragedy, whether it's being out of work for one reason or the other, whether it's a hurricane and they weren't able to afford insurance and they have to start all over again. So we're all living in some form. So the most important thing, Dr. Adley, I think we need to, you shouldn't live in denial and you shouldn't be fearful to seek help, because everybody needs help at some point.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, the Mental Health Association and the Bahamas Psychological Association came together, and our theme was mental health is health too. And folks need to know that, because the emphasis over the years has always been on physical health. But the fact is that you can be physically healthy, but if you're not mentally healthy, then you're not totally healthy. And so we have to get people to understand the checks and balances, you know, and that has been my thrust. I wanted to include that anger is such a big thing that we have to work with. When individuals are diagnosed, sometimes they come in there and they're very angry. How did this happen? How did God allow this to happen to me all my life?
Or me, how did I allow it to happen to me, right?
Because I've been exercising, I've been doing, you know, I've watched my diet, and you're telling me that I'm diabetic, okay? And we have to work through that anger to get them to accept it. And once you get them to the point of accepting it, then it's a little easier for you to work with them. But the anger, the frustration, okay? And it's thoughts that, does this mean I'm going to die? And the negative connotation, some people feel, yes. the minute you say diabetes, it's like, oh my goodness, that's such a shameful, you know, word.
But I mean words such as, or terms such as schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. These are words that anyone who's being diagnosed, they're even taught, sometimes even by their own psychiatrist or psychologist, keep it to yourself, because you're going to be stigmatized. That'll prevent you from getting that job or getting that promotion. That may prevent you from dating or finding love or getting married. Mm-hmm. So we need to know, make individuals understand that it shouldn't destroy your life.
No.
And it can. Mm-hmm. If it's untreated, it can literally destroy your life.
Right.
And not only your life, we look at, particularly this is a matriarchal society where women are fundamentally important in the development of children. If a woman has a mental illness, studies were shown conclusively, and there's no doubt about it, it's going to fundamentally affect the development of that child, yes. And it can be a generational negative impact that can be cyclical and can affect this generation, the next generation, and the next generation ever. So we need to take out that stigma that mental health is something of that, first of all, even some people are so ignorant that they think that you can catch it by associating yourself with somebody else.
Yeah, or the other thing that we see culturally as well is, you know, the role of the church in mental health and praying it away, you know, and I've seen this, you know, the church in any way, but it's a reality in which we face is that obviously this is not something you just pray away. This is not something that you just wish is going to go away, because it isn't. You know, we have to claim it. We have to be responsible with it. And we have to then be able to obviously provide the necessary support to people to be able to help them to cope with obviously whatever it may be that's going on. And that may be from simple things, just as simple advice, to medications, to sometimes even institutionalization for a period of time to allow people to be able to recover. And part of our role is to ensure that we are giving everyone the best opportunity to have the best outcome.
Well, I'll propose a few questions to the listeners, and just this is a food for thought. How many of you would respond in the past that you were off or fine, that you were feeling fine, or you're doing well when you truly were not? How many of you reached out to friends or family or support groups when you were stressed or overwhelmed with anxiety or depression? Unfortunately, most persons are going to say that they always say they're fine. And there's a term that we often use, particularly for men, it's toxic masculinity and its interplay with mental health. So even we'll speak a little bit about from your perspective, Dr. Adley, boys are taught you need to bottle up your weakness. Suck it up. You're gonna seem soft if you cry.
Yeah.
If you're a big sissy. Yeah. Never seek help for your pain. Just internalize it, and you don't know how that's eating away at you, and how that's gonna affect you as an individual, your personality, how it's gonna affect your relationships, how you're gonna treat your wife, how you're gonna treat your children, and it's something that happens all the time. All boys and girls, if you're stressed at school, if you're having problems with your classmates or your friends, seek help. Speak to your parents. Speak to your grandparents. Speak to your teachers. Speak to your guidance counselor. Get over that problem. Don't be angry. And as you mentioned, so many men in particular in this country are quick to reach for a gun. They're quick to reach for the knife. They're quick to fight and to react, because they've internalized this anger over the years and they don't know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. How do we speak to young boys? How do we reach out to young, whether they're 6 years old or 7 years old? I don't think there's too early a stage for us to reach out to them to make them understand that they need to reach out for help and it's not a sign of weakness.
Yeah, it's interesting. Several years ago, my son came home and said to me, "Daddy, it's not cool to be smart anymore." And I said, "What do you mean by that?" Because that was the silliest thing. He said, boys take on a whole lot of pressure if they appear to be very smart in school or nerdy. In fact, they're bullied. Mm. He said, "You don't understand the stress that we as young men go through." And that was quite interesting because I never went through that. So to be a boy in school today means that it's tough. You have to act tough. You have to pretend that you don't care. You have to almost void yourself of emotions. It means that we have to encourage our young men to talk. Mm-hmm. We have to enter their world to find out what are some of the issues that they're experiencing, to express emotions in a positive sort of way, to talk about things, to just get them talking. What's interesting, you notice that at funerals, a lot of times the women are in church and the men are outside with T-shirts, with their dark glasses and drinking Kalek or some of the alcoholic beverages. It's not manly to show emotions. Mm-hmm. And we need to get this across that early intervention matters, okay? And stigma should not stop you from getting help. And that's critical. And we have to start with our young men. I saw a quote the other day that, and this is interesting, it said that they were talking with some young people, and what came across as anger, when they realized it wasn't anger, it was really grief. Mm. And they said that there's so many young men who are hurting in our society, and they express their grief through anger. And sometimes, so now we want to ask the question, why is it that we see so much violence? Why is it that we see so much bullying? Why is it that you happen to walk on a pair of my white Converse tennis and I'm willing to, you know, to stop you and pull out a gun?
Yeah.
And it has nothing really to do with anger per se. It has to do with grief. It has to do with loss. Okay. And then when we begin to look at loss, we begin to think in terms of who are we grieving? Well, a lot of them were growing up without father figures in the home, without mentors, without persons who can teach them what it is to be a man. And so they're angry because I get up, I'm living with mom. Mom has to be extremely strong to be able to rule, to deal with me. And every day I go out into the world and I'm very, very angry, but I can't express, I can't say it. I haven't been taught how to communicate it, so I demonstrate it.
I think one of the other things that I've been seeing a lot of over the years is also the impact of social media. Social media, you know, while it has a role and there are certainly some positive things associated with it, there's also quite a bit of negative, very much in our young people. And they're being so dominated by, obviously, social media with TikTok and this talk and that talk, and their minds are being skewed in a direction where it is almost becoming unrealistic. And they are living in a world, in my experience, where their reality is warped and the meaning of relationships and being able to talk. And so I think the key here for us as individuals as parents is one of the points that you already mentioned, which is mentorship is critical. And young people, if you're listening, families, fathers, mothers, guardians, if you're listening, if your children are at home and they don't have a mentor, you need to be the mentor or get them a mentor. Speak with their teacher, speak with their pastor, speak with a trusted friend who your child has the ability to be able to go to no matter what is going on, and speak with them and say, hey, this is the challenge that I'm having. The other thing that I think is really important is being able to create open communication. You know, I remember as a boy growing up in Rock Sound in a small community where you would be able to go and sit on the porch of the neighbor, and it was a neighborhood meeting. People sat down and we talked about what was going on, concerns. How are we going to be able to address these concerns? Now we go into our houses, we lock the door, put up the screens, close the doors, and we are living isolated. And so again, have an opportunity to be able to have positive social interactions, getting involved in organizations, Boys Brigade, Boy Scouts, the type of things that we would have grown up doing. Yeah. You know, and getting the kids engaged in sports. I mean, the Bahamas is one of the most incredible sports persons in our country that have excelled in sports. And let's create environments for our young people to be able to continue to excel in sports and giving them the skill set that they need to be able to do these things within the educational system. And, you know, school is just not about academics. Mm-hmm. School is about creating a good, safe environment for students to be able to actually be the best person that they can possibly be.
Yeah, you spoke about something that Dr. Adley, you mentioned that your son said that it's not cool to do well in school. And I actually had a topic a few months ago just on that. We can look at the decay of our society. Essentially, we're losing a generation of men, not just to crime, not just to waywardness. They have no goals in life. They have no academic prowess. They have no interests. Our society is such that women are the ones who are excelling. Even 30 years ago when I was in school, it would be me and another male who would be on the honor roll, and everybody else, you look around, it's all the women. Mm-hmm. When I went to medical school, it might have been 75% women, and now it's 90%.
That's right.
All the professional careers are being overwhelmed by women. But men don't realize if they sacrifice in their youth in terms of having a goal, trying to, and you mentioned, it doesn't necessarily need to be successful in your life. You don't need to be a doctor. You don't need to be a lawyer.
No.
You don't need to be an accountant. Exactly. You don't need an MBA. Some of the most successful, and you can measure success in many levels in many ways, are those who work with their hands. Mm-hmm. They're geniuses in what they do. They can build a house from nothing. Mm-hmm. And their skilled labor that can provide for several generations. They've created generational wealth just based on that. Maybe academically they weren't excelling, but in terms of being the best plumber, being the best carpenter, being the best mason, being the best contractor, electrician. Mm-hmm. And we need, and in this society, there's so many persons who would love to, once you know a good electrician, you're going to tell your friend, you're going to tell your cousin. And that person has a successful career because of their skill, because of their honesty, because of their diligence. So just because you may not academically be good at chemistry or physics, there are other avenues to be successful in life. Being successful in life is also being good to your wife. It means being good to your children. It means being good to being a mentor to other persons in the community. So there's so many ways that we can contribute to our society, but the decay of our society starts from men having no emphasis on any type of future. All they want to do is to play dominoes, play cards, hopefully get a job as a waiter at a hotel, and that's the end of their dream. We need to look to the stars and have no limit on the dreams for our young men. We'll continue this interesting topic on the other end of the break. This is Urologist Speaks.
try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers, for window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located within telephone 302-2361.
Mommy, guess what I did in school today?
Hold on, sweetie. Mommy's sending a text.
But Mommy, my teacher said that you're not supposed to text and drive.
I know what I'm doing.
Oh, look, Mommy, the Smith twins. Mommy, watch out!
In 2017, approximately 54 people died as a result of traffic accidents. A percentage of these fatalities occurred as a result of texting while driving. Just taking your eyes off the road for 5 seconds can increase your chance of crashing. Remember, even the smallest voice counts.
Texting.
Brought to you by UB Radio and Guardian Radio 96.9.
Always on the go? Missed a show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. This is The Urologist Speaks with the Him Urologist, Dr. Gregory Pinto. And in the co-host seat is Dr. Graham Cates, who is the medical director of Family Medicine Center. And we're very fortunate to have in the studio today our feature guest, and it's Dr. Richard Adley, who is a clinical psychologist. So we were just talking about the hopelessness and the decay of men in our society, of boys leading to men in our society, a lack of role models, a lack of goals, a lack of self-motivation. And when we talk about role models, there are too many negative role models.
Yeah.
You want to be like your uncle who's a drug dealer. You aspire to be the next rapper and get 12 women pregnant. There's too much of that. There's not enough positive role models in terms of being good fathers, being good grandfathers, being good uncles. And our society is paying a tremendous toll because of that. There are too many men in this society, and their occupation is crime.
Yeah.
Because crime pays. Mm-hmm. And they know that the justice system is on its knees. They know they can get away with it. The most they might get is 3 months on remand, where no matter what, if they're caught with the gun, if they're caught with the bullets, if they're caught with the stolen merchandise, they're going to be out and unsupervised. That ankle bracelets really are meaningless. Maybe the court case might come around in 5-7 years, and if it does, by that time, most of them have intimidated the witnesses, or the witnesses are no longer interested because of fear of a retribution in testifying against them. So I don't know where we're going to go in terms of turning around our society, but definitely we need to have a society where life has meaning, where life has repercussions, where you can't just go and shoot a kid in their house in a drive-by shooting who's doing his homework, and then you're caught with the gun, you're caught in the car, getaway car, you're eyeballed by witnesses, and you're still going to be out on bail in 3 months, and that the court case never comes about. So then you have individuals who have to resort to street justice. So you're creating a whole generation of persons because of anger. They lost their child, they lost their mother, they lost their brother to senseless violence, who are reaching out to hitmen. Mm-hmm. And street justice, we see it all the time. Persons who are going on who are out on bail being killed at a very high rate. I don't know where the it's going to be very difficult to change for this generation, but at least we can save the boys from becoming those criminals from the time they're 5 years old, the time they're 6 years old. Let's enroll them in sports. Let's enroll them in some kind of positive activity, some clubs where they can have some mentorship, even going on to teenage years. Let's find someone in a community who has been successful and overcome their poverty. Just because you were born into poverty, poverty does not define if you can, will become. So we need to get our young men in particular to dream big, and to believe in themselves. And when we talk about mental illness and depression and anxiety, and you can't blame so many persons in the society. We have a society that's crime-ridden, where so many of us have some form of post-traumatic stress disorder because of crime. Crime has taught us all. How many mothers, how many husbands are having sleepless nights because every little noise they hear, they have to check to see if someone's trying to break into their house again. It's like we're living under siege. We're afraid to go out and have a nice night with our family in a restaurant because we know when we go out, we might get held up in the parking lot. It's just we're being prisoned in our own homes while the prisoners run the country. And I've year by year, decade by decade, our society is falling apart. I don't know what the solutions are, but I think we at least if we can reach out to the young persons before they turn to crime, maybe the next generation we can save. And it might be too late for many in this generation. If you're a career criminal, there's not much you can do. They're not listening to us. They're not listening to anyone. That's all they know. They don't care if they live or they die. They don't care about their family. They don't care about anything. They don't even care about themselves. But if we can instill values in the young boys, let them believe in themselves, let them read. No, how many persons in this society have never read a book? How many 12-year-olds have never read a book? They don't care about homework. They don't care about going to school.
And I think the thing, Greg, I just want to add on to that is that, you know, we are an island nation of 400,000 people. Right? There's no reason, in my opinion, and I think with any of us sitting around this table and probably a lot of people listening to us, that we cannot do something positively to impact the trend of what we are actually seeing. And I think for a lot of us, obviously, we sit there in disbelief, trying to understand why are we where we are. But the reality is that for us to be able to move forward, we have to be able to set a new mandate, right? And whatever that new mandate is, government, private organizations working collaboratively together through public-private partnerships to be able to come up with solutions so that we can change the tide and the direction of where our society is moving. We know some of the things that work. Communication, basic communication skills. Like, we need to be teaching people effective communication skills. We need to be engaging people through community activities. Like, what happened to community activities? When I was a boy growing up, we had community activities all the time. The plotting of the maypole and this dance and that event that was going on, which people felt comfortable at being able to actually come out to and being a part of. And you felt it was safe to be able to do so. And I think we organizationally, culturally need to get back to a place where we create safe spaces for people. They're going to have mentors. They're going to be able to speak with people, positive influences in their lives so that we can have. We're spending some time talking about the men of our country, but ladies and young women listening, we're talking to you as well because you play a key role into the future and the success of our country. We want also to make sure that you are a part of the benefits and the success of the Bahamas as we move forward. And as we've said already, mental health spares no one. One in three adults at some point in their life will have a significant mental health problem. That's the reality of what we're faced with. And we have all gone through periods in our lives of stress, anxiety, burnout, maybe depression because of a lost one, someone that we've lost who has been close to us. But there is hope. We can get through to the other side, but we cannot do it on our own. We need the support of other people. We need the support of people that can speak truth into our life and help us to provide us with the skills to be able to get out on the other side successfully.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about two things. Hope. Hope is so important. Several years ago, we did a focus group with adolescent males who had attempted suicide. And it was really, really interesting that at the end of it, the overall statement was that when you've lost hope in life, then it's easy to think about suicide. And for the first time, it dawned on me that I don't think Richard Adley ever got to that point where I didn't have some hope.
Yeah.
There's so many young men out there who don't have hope. And so if you don't have hope, then you're open to any sort of adverse activity. And then the skills that you mentioned, communication is one of them, but there's a body of research that looks at four key skills that young people need today in order to survive. And the first is goal setting. A lot of young people have no goals. You see, because if you've got a goal, you've got something to get up every day. You remember our grandparents used to say, if you plan your day, because if you don't plan something, then someone else will plan something for
That's
you.
That's right, yeah.
And think in terms of how many people, young people, get sidetracked because, what are you doing today, Greg? Oh, I ain't got nothing to do. Well, come go with me. Okay? And you go with that person and you get yourself into problems.
With the crows you were found.
Right. Okay? So how do we get young people to start thinking in terms of goals? And then secondly, it's decision making. Okay? How do you decide? How do you weigh options? You see? It's consequential. Okay? What happens if I get angry and I take that knife out? Okay? What happens if I stab you? My life. It's just about over, you know? But I'm willing to do it because I don't weigh the consequences. And then communication. And then the last thing is stress management. And I think there's a responsibility for parents and other adults to teach children how to manage stress, you see? And children mimic what we do at home. So as parents, sometimes if we haven't developed skills in how to cope, how are we going to expect our children?
Yeah, and there are so many unhealthy coping skills that people develop, you know. You got alcohol. That's a major problem that we have in the country. I mean, you know, as a part of our questioning of patients when persons come into our practice for their annual physicals, we always ask about drugs, we ask about alcohol, we ask about smoking. And it is not uncommon for our young men to say that they'll have 6 to 10 beers a day. Like, this is normal behavior to them, but the reality is that it's not normal behavior. Like, this is a problem, right? And we need to be able to speak into it. And then, of course, marijuana is becoming increasingly prevalent among, obviously, our young people. We're seeing it. We're seeing other drugs coming into our environment, cocaine, other exotic drugs that are now penetrating into the Bahamas. And so I think these are unhealthy coping that people are seeing within their home. And so if you see your daddy doing it, well, it becomes the norm. You sit back, you have a six pack or a half a case of beer in the evening to quote unquote unwind from your stressful day, only to be riled up because alcohol is a depressant. It doesn't help you. You may feel good in the moment, and feel feeling okay. It's a depressant, and it's just a vicious cycle that goes on and on. And then out of that, you end up with violence in the home. So the child who then is to do homework and is stressed about homework and doesn't know how to do it gets a slap across the head because you're dumb, you're stupid, you don't know what you're doing, or go in the corner, don't speak with me type of thing. So as parents and as guardians of our children, we need to be mindful of what we see happening. We need to make sure that we are speaking to our kids, keeping open communication. If you are aware of situations, you know, and you don't have the power or the ability to be able to speak into those situations, speak with somebody, reach out to somebody, get help, because help is available to you. through social services, through obviously other resources that you are much better positioned to speak in than me. I mean, what are some of those services that people can reach out to?
We have the Bahama Psychological Association that has that prior to Doreen established a hotline and through COVID and continues today. We also have to look at the crisis center, okay, and we also have a lot of young psychologists coming up in the school system through guidance and counseling and also school psychological services, which makes it a lot easier. And even like an institution like UB, we have a lot of young people who want to do just voluntary peer counseling.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Because sometimes we find that people are young people are more comfortable talking with people who are in set with them. And so in our counseling classes and also my research classes, we've got literally 50, 60 young people who are willing to volunteer themselves in the community. We've got to resurrect, like you said before, the old Boys Brigade, Scouts, Girl Guides, okay? Yeah, I think all of these
the things. Churches, the church, you know, the churches especially. Are important as
yes,
well.
Yes.
You know, your healthcare provider. I mean, mm-hmm. speak with your healthcare provider if you're stressed or you have concerns or worries mm-hmm. so that they can help to point you in the right direction. They may not have all of the necessary skills in that particular area, but obviously can refer you to a person like Dr. Mm-hmm. Hadley or his colleagues or associates. Greg, you mentioned that you spent time up at Sandilands, mm-hmm. you know. The stigma associated with people going to Sandilands in our country, unfortunately, means that you're crazy, mm-hmm. right? And you have no hope. Speaking of hope, right? Yeah. It's a hopeless institution. That is not true. Mm-hmm. It has a role to play just like any other facility in our country, including our facility, Family Medicine Center. It has a role to play. And there are people which are outpatient. It's not all inpatient. It doesn't mean if you're referred to Sandilands that you're immediately going to be locked up in some room with pads and thrown away the key forever. No, there are resources available to you, counselors, psychiatrists, mm-hmm. psychotherapists, nurses that are trained and skilled to be able to provide you with services, just as if you were to go into an ICU, a doctor's mm-hmm. hospital, or Princess Margaret Hospital because you had some other medical condition that you needed the assistance.
So we talked about self-medicating, self-treatment for depression, anxiety, hopelessness. We also need to talk about prescription drugs, opiates, narcotics that are also overwhelming problems in terms of addiction. The other thing we need to talk about, which is very prevalent in the society and is part of the decay of our society, is irresponsible sexual behavior by young women and young men. They don't care. Mm-hmm. Men don't care if they get a sexually transmitted disease. They don't care how many children they have. In fact, they wear it like a badge of honor. Oh, I have 10 women pregnant at any one time. And where is our society going to be when all those 10 kids are growing up without a father? And it's a crying shame. And the Minister of Health has recently spoken about a sound of the alarm in terms of the chlamydia and other sexually transmitted diseases. I've seen the uptake in my practice with persons coming in with sexually transmitted diseases, men and women, and the consequences of that. Even if you treat it with a sexually transmitted diseases, that increases your risk of getting, for example, from my perspective as a urologist, of getting prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. Many years down the road, it increases your risk of potentially getting a urethral stricture. Mm-hmm. 5 years, 10 years down the road when you were treated for a sexually transmitted disease. If you have, by the time of 3 kids for 3 men, how are they going to get out of that hole? I mean, and the hope for their children is in many cases very grim. We have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Pina, and your host. I wanted to add to what the gentleman was talking about with Sandilands.
Yes.
I was in Sandilands. My mother had me committed with drug use and all of that. And that was one of the best things that ever happened to me. Besides graduating from college, being born and finishing college, that is right up there with that. Because to help you get there, you learn so much. It's beyond, see, a lot of people, they need an hour. Where people go in and sit down and look at it so they can get a better understanding of what Sandlands does. Because I one time after I got out, a couple of years after I got out, I was so tired and I needed rest. I called them there and asked them if I could come up there for a month. I tell them I'll pay to go to the retrimand. Because the facility is geared in a way you get your exercise, you get your rest, you eat properly, you're around a lot of sensible people, and you start to come to your senses. Today, I am now a millionaire. I try to even sell off some of the stuff I have right now. But a lot of people who think Sandlands is not a good place to go need to go check it out. They need to have tours for Sandlands so people can see how the thing works, so they wouldn't have this fear or phobia of Sandlands. Because if you want to get some good rest, that's a good place to go.
Well, I thank you for your very positive story.
You get some good exercise. As a result of that, I exercised for about 15 years after leaving there.
I remember from my time there, there was a wonderful psychologist, and God rest her, our late soul, Dr. Gardner. She actually had this whole ceremony where they would actually have your funeral for someone who came with a drug addiction or alcohol addiction. They would actually have a funeral, and people would speak about you as you lay there as if you were dead to try to allow you to be reborn. And I've seen many successful stories of persons come and overcome their addiction and be...
Well, I am one of them. I am one of them, and I want the world to know. I'm not ashamed to say it. I wish a lot of young people would go and at least check it out and turn their life around. You wouldn't have all this crazy stuff going on, because the people there help you.
Very much so.
They talk to you nice. You can come in there as bad as you want to be, and by the time you leave, you yes or no, and you are good accord with everybody there, and you're happy. That's what I want. I got so friendly with them, and they will be all like you become a unit or a community, a little community within itself. And sometimes when the government would confiscate things from folks out there, we have a good meal. You eat better up there than you eat out here sometimes.
Very much so. Very much so.
They have to do something about how people view that place. Take children there so they can see that is a place of hope and help. Because I am a living testament that it worked. Today I am comfortable. I have my money in the bank. I have apartments. I have shops. Because my mother was bold enough and not afraid of me and took me to Sandlands. She had, when I was in Freeport, she came to get me. I didn't know she had already spoke to my boss, already had the CID around the corner if I played crazy. But it's a good thing I wasn't really a bad child when it came to my mother. I obeyed her, although I didn't catch on to what happened until I got there. And they were walking this way, and the nurse said, no, come this way. You know, that's me saying, you don't need this, you don't need that. Then I realized I was being committed. But I took it, and I went through the procedure because I wanted help. And people think it's going to come with the Star Spangled Banner and all that. You got to seize the opportunity when the help comes. It's not going to come how you think it's going to come. That's what I realized in there. Because I thought I would have been laying up in a couch somewhere, listening to a psychiatrist for an hour or two, and then I come right on, go right around the corner back to my friends. But that lockdown, especially with drug addicts and alcoholics and people like that, that is a big help.
Well, you have a very, very positive story, and I hope you've, and I'm sure out there. So, yes, we need to take away the stigma of mental health in our society. We need to take away the stigma of Sandlands as an institution.
They need to let this next generation go on tours up there.
I agree.
So they don't have this fear and call people crazy like the crazy. You go, it's like when you get shot. When you get shot, they don't say, oh, you're a crazy shooter, or you look here. No, they want you to heal and get better.
Yes,
so. That is the same thing up there. They want you go up there to heal and get better. So they have to start viewing that as like when you're shot or you get knocked down or something like that. You go in the hospital and they fix you and they heal you to the best of their ability. That's how they have to start looking at that.
Wonderful words, and I thank you very much for your call. That was very inspiring. I think let's talk about other aspects of mental health. And I think as we have less than 10 minutes left, we definitely need to have you both back many times. In particular, May is actually Mental Health Awareness Month. But even before that, I'd be happy to have you both back. And let's talk about the link between what is a terrible scourge in our society of all ages, and that's perpetual debt and depression in our society. There's a lot of hopelessness, even those who are working, that they don't have anything to look forward to, because by the time they have their salary deduction for this and for that, and with the high cost of rent, and they'd have no room to wiggle or anything else, they have no hope because there's nothing to live for. So they have very poor work ethic. They only exist in their jobs. They do the bare minimum because there's nothing to push them to succeed, because they know that they'll never get out of their circumstance. They've gone so far into credit card debt. They've gone so far into car loan debt. They've made one financial blunder after the other. And so many of us are living like that, that they don't even have $300 in their savings account. And what do they have to live for? They don't have money for a vacation. If something happens, and they don't have money on to be saved to get them over that little problem. I think we need to teach young persons as well financial responsibility.
Very much so. Mm-hmm.
And that is another thing that's glaringly lacking in our society, financial responsibility. It's all well and good to have a great job, but if you spend more than you make, mm-hmm. you'll never have a future, no matter how much you make. I mean, there's some persons who make a little bit better than a minimum wage, but they do so well with that little bit of money that they're able to save for their future and maybe and make some investments. And so what we want, obviously, is for our children to do better than we did. We want to do better for us. But I see that for many persons in our society, every generation is staying in the same rut of being in debt and never getting out of that debt. And no one is, in fact, maybe your children are doing worse than you. And you can expect the children of these people to do even worse. Your grandchildren will do even worse. So we're going in the wrong direction. And I think that we need to reach out to the youth. We need to get them involved in positive things. We need to make them love the Bahamas, love their fellow man, love God. If you see how your mother is struggling, maybe you should do something positive with your life so that as she gets older, you can take care of her. Mm-hmm. Why repeat that cycle? Why would you, as a young woman, want to suffer and struggle like your mother is suffering and struggling? So you know what? Be very responsible in who you date. Be very responsible. Of course, they say the most important thing you can do in your life is who you marry. That can destroy
make
you,
or
make
you,
or break
that's
you.
That's right.
Financially, emotionally, spiritually, they can take the best years of your life. So make wise decisions. Make wise decisions in school. Make wise decisions in the friends that you hang out with. If you're hanging out with the people who are in the wrong crowd, who don't want to study, who are wayward, who don't have any positivity, you're going to be like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you are hanging around with people who have 10 beers a night, you're gonna likely going to drink 10 beers a night.
Birds of a feather. Yeah.
If you're going to hang around with men who their goal in life is to get as many women pregnant mm-hmm. and never know what a latex condom is, you're going to go down that road, and eventually you're going to get hit with HIV. You're going to get hit with herpes or hepatitis. Mm-hmm. You're going to be in and out of court paying child support for kids, and you'll never get out of debt. Mm-hmm. So don't destroy your life just when it's started. Mm-hmm.
I see as a country, and I think this is globally, not just for the Bahamas, is that people don't want to make sacrifice. Right? People want to live in the moment.
Instant
gratification. And I was alluding to this earlier mm-hmm. in my conversation about social media. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think technology has great, and certainly from a medical perspective, it has revolutionized the way that we're able to do things and in many other areas of our lives. But I think it's also a greatest curse that we are faced with. Because I think what we're seeing is where there is this instant gratification that everybody feels is that they are entitled to. And you are not. Stop it. Mm-hmm. You are not entitled to it. You need to work for it. You need to work yourself to get to a position where you are entitled to be able to get it. To think that you can just simply show up, work, and then go and spend all your money at the end of the week and then come to your employer and say, oh, I need a salary advance, for example. Go to the bank and say, oh, I'm going on a vacation and I want to get a salary, a loan to go on vacation. No, be responsible. Stop making unwise decisions. And if you need counsel, speak with somebody. There are members of our community that have been through the ranks of growing up in very difficult circumstances and have made wise decisions. And oh, going back to what you were saying, Richard, earlier, this is about goal setting. Are your goals mm-hmm. for your life? Mm-hmm. Where are you heading? Mm-hmm. What do you want to do with your mm-hmm. life?
Mm-hmm. I mean, far too often, if you ask a typical 7-year-old, 9-year-old young man in this country, what is your dream? What do you want? I want to play in the NBA. I want to play in the NFL. They don't realize that the life they see glorified on Instagram or they see on TV regarding these athletes, they don't realize what they went through and the sacrifice they made to get to that level. One in 75,000, one in 100,000 will make it to that level.
Probably one in a million.
And not, yeah, even one in a million.
Yeah.
And then if you were to look at it beneath the surface, 75, 80% of professional athletes are broke within 5 years of retiring.
Yeah.
So it's not sustainable for most of them. So they may have that great life, but many of them are worse off than when they started even college. So if you want to get an education, education will take you around the world. Dr. Cates and I are testament to that. So is Dr. Adley. I've seen the world. I've had experiences. I got to marry a woman I never deserved. But if you believe in yourself, the sky is the limit. Good evening. Thank you, Dr. Cates, for being here. And I'd like to thank Dr. Cates. He gave me my start when I came back along with Dr. Digges. And thank you, Dr. Richard Adley. Please come back again.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good evening and a good week, Bahamas.